My next guest is Hip Hop Culture. He founded Fat Beats in 1994, and I'm honored to speak to him. He's Joseph, a.k.a. DJ Jab, and I want to welcome him to Live with Tim Reinicke. Thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Cool. So I want to start like with from the way beginning with Fat Beats, the store. There's a YouTube video out there that's labeled Fat Beats Grand Opening, AL, Freestyle, DJ Eclipse, Q Unique, Destroy, and Chino XL. One, is this YouTube video the actual opening of the store?
No. That's actually the relocation of the original store.
Oh, okay. So, go ahead.
That was in 1996 when we moved into the new location. And by that time, we were very popular. So that's how these video clips got created.
With the original store, the original location, with having artists on, with having DJs, how did the artists and how did those DJs and those performances kind of represent your mission going into Fat Beats?
Well, we started in 94, and it was just really to kind of combat, you know, the lack of vinyl, hip-hop vinyl, mm-hmm. in New York City. It was really hard to buy hip-hop records in 92, 93. It was so house-dominated. So being, you know, someone that came from the hip-hop and turntableist background, I was looking to start a business, or I was right out of college. So that's how kind of the store came about. It was just really, a lack of record stores at the time.
You eventually became one of the best vinyl distributors in the world, and you connected many indie artists to mom and pop record stores around the globe. Can you kind of talk about the impact you see that Fat Beats had, not just the store, but on not just the stores, but also on distribution in general?
Well, just being a DJ myself, and very into the music, just as much as I was into the business, I think really helped. And then hiring sort of like minds of people that understood the style of music that we were selling, I think we kind of became like a gateway for good music. It got to the point where it's like you wanted to have your records in the store and then eventually distributed because of the labels and artists we were working with. And we were basically just taking labels and artists that the industry was rejecting. Because in those days, in the early 90s, they wanted every record to be really big, over 300,000 new sales, gold records, where there was a lot of artists that sold, slightly less than that, that were very good. They weren't getting picked up. So sort of the independent music movement started in the early 90s. And then we just happened to be right in the middle, smack in New York, when the music really started taking off. That's how people just kept coming, because the store was very curated towards, people who like good music. So I made sure that we represented a couple different genres. It wasn't just hip hop, but we also had the best of it. And I really wasn't taking chances, if you want to say. Like, I knew this stuff was going to sell.
You mentioned your staff, and I think the thing about the staff and but not just the store, but for the label and distribution warehouse. Many of them have went from, being behind the register to kind of putting out their own music and touring. And one staff member that I think was seemed very crucial in all this was DJ Eclipse. Can you talk about his importance for you in the store and how helpful he was for Fat Beats?
Yeah. It was 1995. When I first opened up, the industry was pretty strong in New York City. There was a lot of representation from major labels and independent labels. They all had offices. So I used to go around to all the labels and promote the store and try to get the new releases and get some promos and just trying to create awareness. And Eclipse worked at Wild Pitch, and he just happened to be working with MC Search. And OC had just come out. So he came down to the store a couple of times promoting the OC project. Also, they had Large Professor and a couple of compilations they had, and it was really good. Business started picking up, and I recognized Eclipse, was kind of a connoisseur of music, especially the type we were selling. He was very, very educated, knew it inside out. He was a DJ, he even did some b-boying. So when the store started picking up, I needed someone on the weekends just to help out. So he seemed like a perfect fit, very reliable person. So I asked him to start working on the weekends, and he did. And then when Wild Pitch folded, the company, Fat Beats, was doing really well at the time, so we were able to take him on full time. And that's how the relationship started. And, you know, he was a DJ. He came from the South and lived in New York, but his knowledge of the music was just, you know, it was a superior. Like, he just knew about everything when it came to hip-hop, 12 inches, and going all the way back to the albums, to everything.
So I was 94. I was 15 years old at the time. I grew up in Washington Heights. So going to Fat Beats, it was always for me, was it just a great experience, because you never knew who was going to be there, you know, who was going to be battling. And at this time, you know, we had, let's say, The Wiz, you know, Nobody Beats The Wiz, and HMV, you know, all these huge record labels. And I'm trying to get to the point where, point of this question is that DJ Evil D talks about how important Fat Beats was to his career, and he gives Fat Beats this credit for it. Can you kind of give the listener an understanding of, but what was the record store scene like at this time? And then when did you realize the impact that Fat Beats was having on people's career?
Well, you know, in the 90s, you know, there was only a couple of major distributors that controlled everything. And Sony was one of them. And Sony also was a big manufacturer of equipment, CDs, turntables, and things like that. When I first started, I was going around to the industry saying, I'm opening up a record store. And all the people in the labels were like, well, you know, no one's going to be buying vinyl soon. So, you know, and they were giving me all this vinyl, thinking that it's just going to be obsolete. You know, as Sony cut out vinyl, like, the vinyl first started getting cut out from major distributors, you know, and it was to push CD players, mm-hmm. you know, CD sales, but also the players, CD players. So Sony made CD players. At the same time, they're cutting out all their vinyl and pushing CDs. And now CDs cost, you know, a fraction to make of vinyl. And in those days, CDs were like, what, $18.99, $19.99? You know, they were making like a killing in profit. So when we came around, we were like, vinyl, vinyl, vinyl. So when people started seeing that, you know, record stores, major stores are not carrying vinyl anymore, they still wanted it. They weren't accustomed to CDs yet. And if anyone was in New York in the mid 90s, there was a big retro movement. I mean, bell bottoms came back, the whole late 70s style came back into style. And people were buying vinyl. It wasn't just, you know, DJs or people into hip hop. Just regular folks were like, vinyl's getting cut out. Now I want it. Mm-hmm. So when I opened up, they were like, vinyl, you know, so many people came. It wasn't just the hip hop community. Like, if you ever went in Fat Beats, you would see all kinds of different crowds, kind of like New York. You would take all of New York and all the different demographics. Every single person, type of person came down, you know, to see what it was. And I think that we were, you know, pushing something that the major labels were sort of gearing away from. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, a divide started happening. You started seeing, like, you know, when Fat Beats opened up from 94, 96, hip hop was one music,
right.
You know, and then you started seeing sort of changing where, like, you had like very pop commercial sound of people rapping to, and they're saying, well, this is hip hop. And then you had, you know, the other side of it where you had like the hard producers and DJs and MCs just still, you know, trying to create the, you know, the best beats with the best loops and samples with the most complicated, intricate rhymes. So you had these two sort of music starting to develop in, you know, 96 and then 97 moving forward. So now you look at hip hop now and go ask a kid what hip hop is. If you ask 10 kids, they give you all, you know, all of them will give you 10 different answers.
Right.
You know, but we were pushing that sort of, you know, I want to say hip hop from the beginning, and that crowd, you know, kept coming, and then, you know, fans kept coming, and it just kept building. So you do have a couple of different, you know, consumers now when you look at hip hop music, and we happen to have a good foundation of people that just like good music. Doesn't matter the artist or whatever; it's just good music that we sell to. That's why new artists work with us.
How do you make that decision? I mean, from a completely business perspective of it, like you just mentioned, there's different waves of hip hop that are coming through, right? How do you decide? Like, how do you decide? Not take that commercial record because it's, you know, because if you take the commercial record, you're going to get, you know, guaranteed sales, right? But how do you weigh that balance of, like, you know, selling versus, I guess, I don't maybe authentic hip hop or not as much selling hip hop?
Yeah, I mean, authentic is a good name. We can't sell that stuff. You if you take the top 10 Billboard, you know, rap records, we can't sell it. Like, our, you know, the stores that we distribute to won't buy it, and the customers that come to Fat Beats won't buy it either. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe a few. So it just doesn't work with us. So it, you know, became where it's sort of, I would call that like pop, you know, pop music.
Right.
But we don't have success with that. Like, you know, when Eminem first came out, he had an EP that we picked up. And we sold it, and we sold his records since. And then we sold Kanye West and stuff. But, like, a lot of this new stuff, we wouldn't be able to sell it. Mm-hmm. It just, people won't just buy it from, you know, because they know if they go to fatbeats.com and go to the store, you know, they're expecting, you know, people, you know, the trees of, like, Pete Rock and DJ Premier and, you know, like you mentioned, Evil D, the Beat Miners, you know, Black Moon and Redman, you know, people that come from them, those stems. That's the kind of style of music they're expecting for us to sell and distribute. So all this kind of new stuff that's very electronic and slow and not very lyrical, because that shot by Fat Beats won't, you know, we would sort of hurt ourselves if we carried that.
Mm. We're talking about releases, and obviously you just mentioned a bunch of releases that you guys have had. During your time in New York with the New York Fat Beats, are there any kind of releases that you think have had the most, or have had such a great impact in hip hop, or have just stood out to you in terms of, like, maybe just slept on releases, but for you are just incredible releases?
No, we had like Missing Links. We did a 12 inch with Missing Links. That took off and had a sample that Dr. Dre sampled with Snoop eventually, and it was interesting because the producers that used to produce for Dre and them used to shop at Fat Beats. So there was, you know, certain songs that really took off. Digging in the Crates was a label that we worked with, that we still work with, but we worked with in the mid-90s. And, you know, they put out Day One, which was a Posse song. It was like the first time they, you know, they all rhymed together. That was a huge impact. And then the labels we worked with had, like, amazing records, like Raucous. When Raucous came around, we were distributing records that featured Mos Def and Talib Kweli, but then they signed them, and Raucous put out Universal Magnetic, right, which was produced by Sean J. Period, and it was Mos Def single, and that thing just really, really took off, and it was, you know, you could sort of see the difference. You were like, oh, you know, here's the kind of music that Fat Beats sells, and here's the commercial stuff that's being played on the radio. And, you know, for every 10 people that just buy whatever's marketed to them, you have that one person that's, like, looking and listening for music, and that's the person that we catered to.
Did that ever help, or does that not help you? Or if you're selling Eminem before he was Eminem, right?
Yeah.
Now you have today's Eminem or commercial Eminem. Does that not help Fat Beats to be like, hey, we knew this guy was something before you knew he was something?
I guess it depends on, you know, where they go. Like, if anyone heard that first EP that Eminem did, none of those songs were on his album.
Right.
You know, it's just different. So, I mean, we did sell the album, and we still sell his album, and we still do carry commercial product. It's just not as much, and you know, it's hard basically to see what, you know, what the kids are going to buy. You know, they have to kind of request it, but it helps. I mean, especially when the artist mentioned, like, yeah, you know, when I started out, I, you know, I went to Fat Beats, this and that. That really helps out because it puts on, you know, puts us in touch with other artists and other people, because you know, once they start getting signed by labels and distributors, and, you know, they just sometimes they forget about the record store.
Right.
And especially this day and age where everything's so digital, where, like, you know, there's still a lot of people that buy physical music. So, you know.
You talked about Kanye West earlier, and there's a video of him in the new store, 1996, spitting at Fat Beats.
Yeah.
But when were you there for that, and what were your first impressions of him at that time? And did you kind of imagine that he would become the Kanye he is today? Or no, as well known as he is today?
Yeah, at the time, I had no idea who he was. I knew that the people that were rhyming, he was rhyming near Al Tariq, Percy P., I forget who else was there, Breeze from the Juggernauts, like Lord Finesse. These were all lyricists.
Right.
So, like, anyone that was rhyming was like, you had to really be on point. So I didn't know he rhymed until Eclipse released that video, you know, years later, mm-hmm. like long time later. And no, actually none of us knew. I forgot who it was. I think Eclipse was just looking through the videos and just happened to see, oh snap, look at that, Kanye West. So yeah, we didn't know. And you know, in those days, like Chino XL was a big freestyler. I remember him coming up. He came in a limousine and he came up there and just killed it. You know, LP from Company Flow. If you look at, you know, Talib Kweli and Jean Grey, like, so it was all these bubbling artists that were just known for lyrics and, you know, just being, putting out good music. So I had no idea who he was and, didn't pay any mind until afterwards, but his music was great. I mean, we liked his, you know, first couple albums, we sold them and everything. And, you know, hopefully, you know, the next Kanye comes through too with the new store opening up.
I want to ask you about the DJ in a second, but I first want to ask you, I remember both locations in New York walking up your stairs, and those stairs were steep. Did anyone ever fall?
not. There's people that, you know, slid down a little bit here and there and caught themselves. You know, most, you know, all sober people have been straight, but there's been some unsober people that's, you know, took it a trip down the stairs.
So back to the DJ, obviously, you know, Fat Beats, you know, to walk into the store and, MCs would be battling. I remember seeing MERS battle, and doing Secret Wars Part 1, live, which kind of blew me away because I only heard them, you know, through tape or, you know, MP3 at the time. But you also had DJs like DJ Neil Armstrong, Rob Swift, just name a few, and yourself, you're a DJ as well. What do you think, was the first kind of performance at the store by a DJ that kind of completely blew you away? But then also, what's the importance of the DJ to the culture for you?
Well, you know, the foundation of hip hop music was with the DJ. You know, so when it started out, you had, you know, the DJs cutting up the breaks, you know, the breakers break in and the MCs, you know, getting the crowd going and then they started rapping. So that was always, to me, like the foundation. And growing up, you know, in the Bronx and then moving to Connecticut, you know, whenever you said, you know, a jam or hip hop jam or wherever, there was a DJ. So I always felt like, well, if you get rid of that, then what happens? You know, and you can't get rid of it. It's like with rock music. You know, you can't get rid of the guitar and the drums and the bass. Mm-hmm. They tried for a while in the 80s. Everything went synth, but it went right back to that. So I felt with hip hop, I was like, you know, all these guys can play with their CDs and their digital stuff and try to get rid of the turntable. But if they do that, first of all, they can't do that because that's the foundation of this culture, and the culture is too strong to go away. So I always had confidence in vinyl and DJs, and we never stopped selling vinyl from 94 until now. Even when the scene crashed and all the stores closed down, we always sold vinyl. Like when Fat Beats retail closed, we just distributed more. Mm-hmm. We went from, you know, retail, people shopping at retail, to people shopping all around the world and us selling, like, more, distributing more product around the world. The stores were in major cities where expenses were too high. In, like, New York City, for instance, unless you're selling, like, diamonds or robbing everyone with huge profits, you can't afford to pay the rent and taxes. Mm. It just the rent per square foot doesn't make sense to a small mom and pops. So that's why the Fat Beat stores, you know, that's one of the reasons why they closed, because the overhead was just way too high. But to me, the DJ and the vinyl is the foundation, sort of the whole culture, and it started that way, and I think it'll always be around. And it shows now. I mean, vinyl has gone back up, and DJs are, you know, somewhat relevant again.
When you talk about DJing, if you talk about the timing of your store, but also the timing of Battle Break Records, they seem to coincide, and I think you guys were on the forefront of kind of purchasing those.
Yeah.
How can you talk about how kind of these kind of records impact turntablism, and kind of, I guess, made DJing or turntablism, kind of brought it to a new level?
Yeah, well, I mean, they were great tools for DJs, because now you don't have to flip through all these different records. So they, you know, the DJs like Lock Raider, Rest in Peace, and the Scratch Pickles, you know, just took their favorite break records that they would always cut up, which were very common for most DJs, you know, the cut up, because that's the one thing DJs had in common, was you would find breaks to cut to, like Peter Piper, for instance, from Run DMC. Mm-hmm. That was just a common record that people cut up to. That was all around the world, just like Rock the Bell from LL Cool J, and you know, and various other ones. But when the battle records started coming around, when the DJs started making the battle tools, it just made it more interesting, because they were adding hits and sounds and stuff that you would try to incorporate into your routine, but it's hard, especially when you're in a competition, because you're usually timed. Mm-hmm. Right. So those things were great, because now as a DJ that wants to practice, you can put on two battle records and just practice that the whole time, because there were so many different records and sounds and hits. So, you know, it's like advanced training, you know. So I thought it was a great thing, you know. The market got oversaturated, but that's, you know, the American way. So,
you know, unfortunately, your Fat Beats the store had to close. What were for those who don't know, what were the main factors that kind of caused the store to close?
It was just a combination. I would say just advancement, management, and advancement. I was going through a lot of personal changes. I didn't really want to put any time into the retail stores, and the staff and stuff were kind of burned out already, and I didn't advance the stores as time advanced. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it was just, you know, I was in New York and LA, Amsterdam. It was just hard, you know, keeping the overhead, because it's just, you know, they're very expensive cities, and vinyl profits aren't like clothing, you know, very, very small. And I also noticed, the distribution company and the website, which was doing a lot better, taking off. So closing the stores gave me more time to focus on what's making more money for the company. You know, right now we're reopening in downtown LA on September 22nd. Mm-hmm. But that store has been open. We've been working out of there for the last 9 months, working the website. So if we did that back in the day, where the store also was the website, you know, it probably wouldn't have closed. It probably would have stayed open. But we sort of needed to go through this transition just to let the scene kind of let all the dust blow over and see who's left over. And, you know, right now opening the store, I think it's a great thing. Like I said, we never stopped distributing it. We still sold to a ton of stores all around the world, even after the Fat Beat store is closed, so you're still able to get the product.
Before we talk about the LA store, what do you think, or where do you think independent hip hop in New York would be if Fat Beats never came along? The store.
I think someone else would, you know, there would have been another store or some, you know, it just, there was too many people that were into, you know, just hip hop for it to kind of go away. They had to go somewhere. So when I opened up, it was a gathering place, you know, and not just New York, you know, worldwide, people would be able to come and gather somewhere, you know, in a safe environment. I think someone else, I think there would have been another place because there was just too many people. Maybe they would have been hanging out at a park or something. Like I used to hang at Astor Place or Thompson Square Park or the park on West 4th in the, on the west side. But they would have gathered somewhere and you know, sort of kept the scene going.
Do you know of any, I envision, I've always kind of envisioned Fat Beat's store as like the equivalent of a, of this, of when people actually, or artists actually went to studios and went to the same studios. And, you know, and you hear stories about two different groups are, you know, recording at the same time and they run into each other in the hallway and they create, you know, something comes out of that, right?
Yeah.
And then I kind of equate that to how Fat Beats is. Off the top, do you know of any, or do you remember any kind of collaborations that might have never happened if they didn't meet at Fat Beats?
I know it was a meeting ground, and I know a lot of labels that were interested in artists would meet them there. I don't know what wouldn't have happened if they didn't meet, but it definitely was a place to you know, to go and to hook up with because it was you know, well known. So when like Asphodel, when they wanted to sign the Scratch Pickles were in town, they met them at Fat Beats. And they're like, you know, let's talk here, whatever, from there go somewhere else. But yeah, you'd have to ask, I guess, artists and labels, you know, who, because you don't know, you know, you just see a bunch of people start talking to each other and kicking it. You don't know if they're doing business or talking about records.
You're, like you mentioned, you're about to open a new store in L.A. Overall, what's the, I feel like that's, I mean, it seems like in this day and age, that is a big risk to take, because you don't know if people are just going to continue to buy online or just download stream or MP3s. But what, for you, what's the importance of the record store, not just the hip-hop culture, but to the culture of music?
Because like with digital downloads, you're just sort of downloading the right to listen to something. So I think the record store for all music genres is important that people actually own, you know, music. Mm-hmm. So when you buy a record from Fat Beats, you own that artist's music. You know, you bought it, you own it on the vinyl version, and it's yours. Whereas, you know, a digital download, if you ever read, you know, there's a clause on that. You have the rights to listen to it through your devices and stuff. So, yeah, I just think it's, you know, artists having people, you know, own their product.
So, you know, you mentioned the new store opening September 22nd.
Yeah.
And you talked a little bit about it, but can you discuss further about like what's the grand opening? I guess the grand opening, what it will be like? Will it be kind of the same scene that the New York Fat Beats had with artists, with, you know, artists to collaborate? Will there be any artists joining you for that opening or DJs?
Yeah, there's a list of DJs performing. You can see that on the website and on social media. I anticipate a couple of artists probably wanting to get on and you know, bit of freestyle. The store is going to look different than the original Fat Beats. It's going to look like a 2018 record store. Still full of vinyl, mm-hmm. full of product, but it's just going to have a different look. And, you know, this is really one of my staff members, you know, it was kind of his dream to, you know, to run a Fat Beats store. So he really wanted to do it and he was capable. So that's sort of how the store came back around. I think it's going to be a good day. We do know the climate of vinyl sales, so we're not anticipating it's going to be like when the original stores were open, when we sold like, you know, ridiculous amounts of records. But I think we're going to have some good stuff. And, you know, being that we distribute a lot of product, we get a lot of exclusive records. You know, we're doing a lot of reissues with major labels and stuff. So with the store, you'll be able to get a lot of stuff first before it, you know, goes out to the world. But one of the advantages going.
DJ Jab, he's the founder of Fat Beats. New store is opening in LA September 22nd. DJ Jab, thank you so much for joining me today in the library of Tomatico.
All right, thanks for having me.